This is the state of things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao, in for Frank Stacio. The landscape is changing as Democrats vie for the presidency. One candidate is out, and a controversial billionaire is in. The Political Junkie is here with us today to talk about the race for 2020 and the life of Ross Perot. But first, this just in, breaking news. Robert Mueller was set to testify next week. Now reports say that is being delayed. Political Junkie Ken Rudin, never a dull moment in national news. What's going on with Mueller's testimony?
No, I agree with you, Anita. And that's why I'm so happy you're having me on the show every day this week, because there's so much to talk about. Well, you know, it was a surprise. He was supposed to testify next Wednesday, the 17th. And it was delayed. We don't know if it's been delayed a week or whenever it's supposed to reschedule, but I think a lot of Republicans on the House Judiciary Committee, there are 41 members of the House Judiciary Committee, and Republicans are saying that the Democrats are trying to stifle their ability to question the former special counsel, so they want to make sure that everybody has a chance to talk. Of course, maybe many Republicans would like to maybe filibuster it or kind of make the hearing into a circus. But whatever it is, there's a disagreement about how to proceed, and it's going to be delayed at least a week. It could be longer, but there seems to be no question that Mueller will indeed testify. We just don't know when.
And Democrats really had been working, staying up late at night, rewatching old videos of previous testimony, so trying to do their homework. I'm sure that'll only continue. In the meantime, a dozen subpoenas were handed down yesterday to high-ranking Trump advisors, including Jeff Sessions, Rosenstein, John Kelly, Jared Kushner, and then some characters like David Pecker, who helped Trump during the campaign silence a pornographic actress. So tell us about the subpoena targets and all of this happening kind of alongside this preparation for Mueller's testimony.
Well, everybody says that elections matter. I mean, the Democrats said that when they won, and Republicans say that when they won. And, of course, when the Democrats took control of the House in 2018, they had an opportunity to do what the Attorney General and the Republican Senate would not do, and that is investigate the presidency. So that's what the House Democrats are doing. Nancy Pelosi, the House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler, they're all working together, issuing subpoenas on everybody or anybody who has something to say about Donald Trump's either business dealings or dealings with Russia or anything like that. Now, of course, the president will say over and over again that it's a witch hunt. The Republicans say it's just a waste of time. We already got the Mueller report, and there's nothing, there's no there. But, of course, people who read the Mueller report, and I'm not convinced every Republican has, but those who did read the Mueller report, it seems by many people that there is an argument to be made about obstruction of justice, and that's exactly why the Democrats are going with these subpoenas to find out what these people who testified before the Mueller hearings, what they know and what they knew.
Okay, Ken, we're going to move now to what we thought was the biggest news of the day.
Before you go, let me just say one thing, which is interesting, because when Mueller was supposed to testify next Wednesday, well, lo and behold, Donald Trump said, I'm going to have a rally
in North Carolina,
on Wednesday. And, of course, the reason he would do that, of course, is to compete with the news about Mueller. He would have his own, you know, Make America Great or Keep America Great rally in North Carolina. Well, let's see, with Mueller not testifying next week, let's see what happens with that plans on the Trump rally. Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Okay, so Labor Secretary Alex Acosta resigned this morning. He'd long been criticized over his handling of the sex trafficking case of billionaire Jeffrey Epstein. The pressure had been heating up about after Epstein's most recent arrest. You have said the resignation was inevitable. And with this resignation, it means that four of President Trump's cabinet agencies are now going to be led by acting secretaries. There is consistent turnover at the top of this administration. What's your take on this particular resignation?
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. They have four acting. You also have an acting chief of staff. And some people will also say maybe you have an acting person in the White House, because basically, a lot of these people are not subject to Senate confirmation because they're all in an acting capacity, and that's the way Donald Trump loves it. But having said this, Acosta, you're absolutely right, Anita. This was a get. Once the federal prosecutors on Monday in New York announced these charges against Epstein about sex trafficking and involving 14-year-old girls, I think Acosta, who was a U.S. attorney back in Florida back in 2008, when he worked out a very lenient sentence on Jeffrey Epstein, and you knew it would come back to bite him. And while Acosta tried to save his job 2 days ago with a press conference, you knew that the headlines would be, you know, continuing no matter what Acosta had to say, and you knew his time in office was very short-lived, and it proved it this morning by resigning.
Okay, Ken, moving on now to the census. Trump has backed off the census citizenship question, announcing yesterday he would sign an executive order to get the data in other ways. So is this another attempt by him to claim victory in the face of what's actually a defeat? What's your read on this census decision?
Well, that's a great question, because the headlines today, you know, said that Trump admits defeat. He because the Supreme Court said 2 weeks ago that you can't ask that question on the census about citizenship. Trump said, I'm going to do it anyway, and then he backed down from it. So the headlines say defeat. But I wonder, when I think about all the people who were terrified and frightened about, you know, census questions about citizenship and legality in this being in this country. Remember, the census is never about who's a citizen and who's not. It's just who lives in the country. So, but with all these people who have been intimidated and nervous about these possible, you know, these census questions, I still think Trump did what he wanted to do. He got people nervous, and he you know, he's fired up his base by showing that he's going to be very tough on people here illegally. So whether the question is on the census or not, I don't know if it's a big defeat. Look, he didn't get the question on the census, but he certainly intimidated a lot of people, and perhaps that's all he wanted to do.
Right, and either way, he's gonna try to get some information from the Census Bureau through other.
Exactly. So I don't know if it's the loss that many in the media are portraying it as.
Okay, let's zero in on North Carolina. This week, we had a runoff election in the 3rd District. More than $1 million in outside money was spent in this race. A group called Winning for Women spent $900,000 to support the female candidate, Joan Perry. Everyone was positing this as a battle of the sexes and are saying, gosh, does this signal that the Republican Party just cannot get more women in office? What do you think?
Well, that's a good question, because basically this is not about whether the Democrats or Republicans are going to keep the seat. This is the seat where Walter Jones, who had held the seat since 94, he died. He was a beloved congressman. It's going to be a Republican seat no matter what. But the fact is that of all the women in the House, there were only 13 Republicans compared to 89 Democrats. So a lot of female groups are saying we need more women in Republican ranks. So they backed a candidate named Joan Perry, who is very conservative. She's pro-life. She's, you know, anti-abortion. She's backed by Newt Gingrich and other groups, and they wanted another Republican female, another Republican woman in Congress. But she lost out in the runoff to Greg Murphy, state rep. And the real headline is not that the real headline to me is that once again, efforts to add ranks of women to the Republican members of Congress are failed. And Joan Perry had a great opportunity, but she was outvoted and outworked by Greg Murphy. So you know, all I can say is it's not good news for Republican women's groups, who know that female voters are moving away from the Trump administration. And obviously, they only have 13 Republican women in the House. They would have loved to have another a 14th, but not going to happen.
Not going to happen. So what is happening is shakeup in the Democratic presidential campaign. We have one candidate out, another one in. You are interested in Tom Steyer, a billionaire hedge fund manager turned philanthropist. So here's the thing. He said in January, I'm not running. I'm going to put all of my attention toward impeachment efforts for Trump. Now he's changed his mind. Who's Tom Steyer and why is he doing this?
Well, Tom Steyer, as you said, you know, a multi-billionaire. He's put in millions and millions of dollars on behalf of liberal and democratic causes. This year, he spent a lot of money on impeachment. Now, that is not the most popular thing among, even though you'll hear a lot of democratic candidates, presidential candidates saying, we want President Trump impeached. That's not what Nancy Pelosi wants. And as it turns out, only one-third of the Democratic caucus in the House is supporting impeachment. So Pelosi thinks it could split the party, and it may do that. But Tom Steyer was pushing for impeachment, realizing it was going nowhere. And he says, I might as well join the crowd, which is now back to 24. Eric Swalwell dropping out was 23. Steyer is now 24. The last thing I think the the Democratic Party field needs is a self-promoted billionaire running for president. I think that we've already had that. Democrats are not happy with it. And I think if you're Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, who are, and then Kamala Harris and others, who argue about excessive money in politics, having Tom Steyer in the race is not good headlines for the Democratic Party.
Okay, Ken, we don't have a ton of time as we blitz through the headlines, but I want to end with remembering Ross Perot. He died this week after a short battle with leukemia. He was a trailblazer, really set the stage, a lot of people have said this week, for a Donald Trump-style figure to win. Who was Ross Perot? What's his legacy?
You know something, when Ross Perot was always in the headlines. He would do something. He was a multi-billionaire. He had this electronic data system company that he made billions of dollars. But when he announced for president in 1992, of course, he announced and he unannounced and he announced again. But when he first announced, President Bush was very unpopular because of the economy. The leading Democratic candidate was Bill Clinton, who was very unpopular because of his sexual peccadilloes that, you know, were in the news constantly. And Ross Perot said, look, the two parties are failing us. The deficits are out of control. We need common sense. So you had this short guy with big ears. You know, they kept saying, you know, every time somebody would say something to him, he said, I'm listening to you. I'm all ears. And he was an eccentric kind of guy, but he touched a nerve that a lot of Americans believed in. And so while he wasn't elected president, he didn't win any states, but he got 20 million votes.
All right, Ken. 19... We're going to have to let us go there. You can find more with Ken Rudin, the political junkie, more of his Ross Perot analysis. Stay with us on the state of things just ahead. We'll talk with author Ruth Moose. Stay with us.